Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, guys. It's quite amazing. We're back in the studio celebrating 15 years of Heritage Radio Network. And this is our Celebrate New York City Beer. You know, a big part of beer and craft beer for me in New York has been the beer bars. And we've got a couple of guests from beer bars on today, as well as a number of experts. And this is kind of the quintessential Beer Sessions Radio in the studio at Roberta's Pizza Bushwick Show. So let's go around the room. We got some guests from far away and near.
Yeah. So my name is Beñat Gutiérrez, and a head brewer from the Gross Brewery, located in San Sebastian in Spain. Came to New York to make a few collabs on our way to Miami for the Eat the Jungle Festival by Tripping Animals. So it's going to be a good time.
Welcome, man. We're lucky, and Miguel's here.
Hello again. Miguel Rivas, the beer trekker, back in New York.
Thanks for bringing your friends, Miguel. All right.
I'm Zach Mack. I own Alphabet City Beer Co. over in the East Village. I've not been back on the show in a long time, so it feels really good to be back in the studio physically since before COVID.
Thanks, Zach.
Paul Ramirez, representing the Bronx Beer Hall, celebrating our 11-year anniversary. It's been a while since we've been out here in Roberta, so we're happy to be here, happy to eat, happy to drink with you.
Yeah, Anthony Ramirez, also at the Bronx Beer Hall, and thanks for having us.
And what's going on tonight after the show?
After the show today, we're heading to the Bash for the Boroughs, hosted by the NYC Hospitality Alliance.
That's a great event. Cheers to Pat,
yeah,
political foodie Andrew Ridgey.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. James Tai, Beer Acolyte Consulting, and just privileged to be in the room right now. A lot of great people, you know, looking forward to this great conversation.
And I know there's a couple other guests that will join us, so this is going to be a full show. And it's just so great to be out here at Roberta's. For so many of us, this was a gathering place, the early days of craft beer. And we always try to put a spotlight on the places that you could actually taste and the beers and that curated them. Before there were all the new breweries, there were beer bars. And Zach and Paul and Anthony, you guys started in the middle of all that. So just bring everyone up to speed. What's Alphabet City Beer Co. and what's Bronx Beer Hall?
Well, we opened up back in, we're going to be 12 next month, which is pretty crazy to say. After we got wiped out in Sandy, we didn't know we were going to make it 6 months, but we're here 12 years later. We're doing fine.
And people say, what was Sandy?
Yeah, exactly. That feels like a long, long time ago. It's crazy to see what's happened to the industry and how people are still interested in beer, but in different ways. We're like navigating that now, but I'm finally seeing the elements of it. I know there's a lot of different discussions about how it's changed, but I'm appreciating the community vibe that I'm finally seeing develop, as opposed to just like the diehard beer fandom, which is still there. I'm starting to notice some of the changes in the business. I'm not sure for you guys if it's the same thing, but people showing up, and we've become like the large living room we've always wanted to be in so many ways, but we happen to have great beer on draft.
That's great. And Paul and Anthony, a little bit about Bronx Beer Hall.
I'm good.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. I mean, so we started it in 2013, so we're 11 this year.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
Huge.
And, our focus, while, you know, beer is obviously a central part of the Bronx Beer Hall, we were really focused on the community aspect of it. You know, beer halls are inherently communal spaces. We wanted to create a space in the Bronx where people could just gather, make their new best friends, meet their wife, meet their husband, meet their friend with benefits, right?
we've made all of that happen.
It's all happened. And, After 11 years in business, we're just excited to still be around, happy, fortunate. And we just released our first beer for distribution outside of our bar. So we have the Bronx Little Italy Italian Pilsner, celebration of, you know, the Bronx Little Italy neighborhood that we're located in. And yeah, we're just excited to still be kicking.
And who'd you all partner with in making that beer?
So I partnered my brother, who we owned the bar together, right? But no, seriously, we actually partnered with Gun Hill Brewing Company, one of the first guys to brew in the Bronx since Prohibition. And I mean, we've always been great friends and big fans of Gun Hill. So we're excited to, you know, that they were able to make it happen.
Yeah. And, you know, just to talk about the Bronx, I mean, Zach's really established himself in the East Village. I mean, you know, a lot of community support. You did a lot during pandemic. You were leader in the Low East Side of Festival. Just tell us what it's like in your neighborhood, your Avenue C and 6th Street.
Yeah, we're seeing
a great place, great part of the city.
It is. So I've lived in that neighborhood since I moved here 17 years ago. I call it home. I'm not planning on leaving anytime soon. It's honestly, I think the part of the reason why we're able to see the transition the way we have is because of where we are. Specific location-wise, it's like the parts of town where people do put down roots and want to come and hang out. Beer is the perfect conductor for being there for that kind of, setting the stage for that kind of that kind of getting together. I really feel lucky that we've been be able to ride the wave of the rise of beer, and we weren't so heavily invested in just being a beer bar that didn't cater to anything outside of just like the experience of drinking beer. Like we will be there for you. Like we still have our retail, and we do very, very well with our retail, and we still have our rotating draft lines, do very, very well with those. No one's asking us to change that. But I love seeing, as anything else that ages, myself included, more appreciation in the actual experience of getting together and have a drink together. And like, and what that means now, like where my Wednesday night used to be something I was just kind of taking for granted going out. But now I'm like, okay, I'm going out on a Wednesday. It's going to better be good.
Got to cancel your meetings on Thursday, right?
And then Anthony, tell us the role that you guys have played in the Bronx, your taste of the Bronx. I mean, one time I went up there, you guys host the Sauce King NYC judging.
Yeah.
One time I was up there, you had some events at the Bronx Museum.
So all of our, we own several Bronx-based businesses. One is called, obviously, the Bronx Beer Hall. The other is From the Bronx, where we create and sell positive Bronx-themed merchandise. The third is Taste of the Bronx, so we help small businesses reach their target audience. Because we know that, you know, sometimes you get so caught up in the weeds running your business, you forget to market yourself, you forget to find the people that want to buy your product, right? So, you know, and that's just another way that we connect community and connect people to one another. And so, you know, we're honored to be part of the hot sauce, the Sauce King competition, to find sauce makers, not only in the Bronx, but across the five boroughs, across the US, right? And bring them together for their love of hot sauce and their culinary expertise. For some, not everyone.
Well, in terms of like cool neighborhoods too, to visit in New York, because we're celebrating New York today.
Yeah.
Arthur Avenue Market.
Number two tourist destination in the Bronx. Who can name number one? Anyone?
Yankee Stadium.
There you go. Yeah, right. Say it louder.
Yankee Stadium.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
There'll be a quiz later. Yeah. Well, we say number two because we're located walking distance from Botanical Gardens and the Bronx Zoo and Fordham University. So that hub
gets super
busy, right? And we're fortunate to be in the middle.
What are a couple of things I can get at Arthur Avenue Market? You tell me, but then I'll tell you what I like.
All right, Paul, you want to tell them? Good.
I mean, of course, first and foremost, you can get a classic craft beer, specifically New York State stuff right there in the heart of the market. You can get some excellent prosciutto, some awesome eggplant, fresh roll cigars. I mean, the list goes on, bro.
Mozzarella.
Mozzarella. It's a vegetable store in the back.
There's produce in the back.
They got figs.
Old school, yeah, man. Yeah, but you know, we know when things are in season. Now I can tell you what the seasonal items are because I've been there for 10 years.
So
I know when we're coming up on fig season soon. So I'm looking forward to that, right?
Did you know that?
They'll start coming in all nice and golden like somewhere in the end of June, and then by August hit real hard, man.
That's like an older guy thing. Figs, yeah, right?
Getting into birds, getting into figs.
Exactly. Taking Metamucil. Yeah,
we're getting a lot to look forward to this year with you guys up in the Bronx.
Yep.
And then our friend Miguel brought in this guy from Spain.
This guy.
But he's not Spain.
No, he's the best country.
He's the best country. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Gross Brewing.
So yeah, we are like 11 years this year.
Nice. Everyone's over a decade over here, right?
Had like a really big like 10th anniversary celebration last year. And yeah, still like we are like a, I would say, medium-sized small brewery, craft brewery in Spain. We like to focus a lot locally, what as local as we can. We sell like 80% of our beer in 200 kilometers around the brewery. Put that as you want in miles, whatever you...
What's a kilometer?
About 120.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah, about 120.
Did you Google that?
I grew up in Canada.
Oh, so yeah. I know miles per hour better than I know like the distance.
Okay, yeah. James can convert things in his brain.
That's funny. Practice.
Important for Celsius. Yeah.
It's been horrible these couple of days, like doing collabs or talking beer with people, trying to translate like liters, hectoliters to barrels or like meters to whatever you are using.
Where'd you go today? I saw you outside with Kevin from Fenback.
Yeah, that's it. We are like brewing a collab today, really like nice and hoppy double IPA. He was showing me around his different locations. Like, I love the Fimback guys. Like, they are being good friends of us for a long time. They come to Europe a lot. We meet in different festivals. So,
wow, man. Yeah. It's great meeting you. We're going to talk more. So, another reason that we're here today was that I'm wearing the Camp Rugbeer hat from John Hall Rugbeer. And then someone's going to walk home with it. Nice. But, you know, our good friend got here. From Ramstein Brewing, one of the original craft breweries in, why don't you scoot down, Zach?
Yeah.
The original craft breweries in New Jersey 25 years ago. Last night I was at Spite and Davo, which is their last week open as a beer bar. And on draft there was Ramstein Kolsch. So I know you've been around a long time, but you've only been back in the New York City market the last year. So our special guest is here. Miguel, if you want to grab some of his beers, we can start drinking them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Introduce yourself, friend.
Well, good afternoon. It's been a...
What's your name?
So for those of you that I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, my name's Greg Zaccardi, and I'm the founder of High Point Brewing Company. And the primary and biggest selling beer that we make is the Ramstein brand. The name should obviously infer it's a German-inspired beer style that I learned how to brew. I started out as a home brewer before I got into the professional world, not unlike most brewers. My local connection to Brooklyn is and kind of the five boroughs is I was the president of the New York City Home Brewers Guild, you know, we had some incredible, I had a couple incredible predecessors. Sorry, I need a bottle opener for this.
You pass it on.
These guys will pass these down here. Well, it's a team.
What beer is that, Greg?
So this actually is a great one to start with. This is our Vienna-style lager. This won a gold medal at the World Beer Cup. So 52 countries, 10,000 entries, and this is a gold. So it's Vienna-style lager. Nice way to start. I brought four beers to try today, including the Rauch beer, which is one of our most recent beers and kind of inspired by a collaboration with Manny from Niche Brands, Manny Calderon. He's been... you know, introducing people in New York to craft beers for decades as well, and he's a great guy. So,
Hold on, let me tell you something. One thing, and for this group, you've got a couple beer bars here represented. You got a Bronx Beer Hall and Alphabet City Beer.
Okay.
And to walk into Spite and Dive and seeing your beer on tap, for me, that was always one of the great things about dedicated beer bars, that they cared and they curated what's on their list. So for me to walk into Spite and Dive and see Ramstein Kolsch on, and there's some customers came in, younger guys, obviously didn't really know a lot of the craft beers. They were asking about Pilsners, and I said, try the Ramstein Kolsch.
Oh, thank you.
And they liked it, and they patted me on the back.
Attaboy, that's great to hear.
So for you guys, Zach, Anthony, and Paul, what role do you guys play as arbiters of taste? I mean, you guys are curating a beer list, which is actually a huge, it's like selecting a wine list in a restaurant. Zach?
Well, it's funny because
let's pass this. The rock beer hat's going down to Greg.
We've come a long way. I mean, like, talk about changes in the industry. Like, when we first opened up, it was just IPA, West Coast style IPA, before West Coast IPA was a word. That was like the driving factor. A lot of craft breweries were really honed in on that style. And I feel like I was always really excited when something, I tried Rammstein on the earliest days we were open, and seeing people who are actually doing unique German styles that we didn't have to veer into import to recreate was really exciting. So it was brands like this that allowed us the opportunity to expose Americans to something locally produced that was rooted in history. So this, and also to the low-key fact that lager and a lot of German styles are what bring a lot of people into beer. It's very approachable, obviously. So,
and then Greg, for you, again, talking about beer bars, when you were in the New York City Homebrewers group way back, you guys met at Brewskies. At a beer bar.
Brewskies,
next to Burb Castle.
Next to Burb Castle. Jerry, he was classic in the kind of the early days of craft beer. And that really was the thing that kind of got me going into it. You know, I lived in California, went to the University of California, got a degree in chemistry. First beer I ever had was Sierra Nevada Pale Ale back in the 80s, and it just launched off from there. After, running the New York City Home Brewers Guild, I said, I can see this being something bigger. At that time, in New Jersey, I think there were only like 3 or 4 craft breweries. New York was still blossoming, starting to grow. Obviously Broken Brewery was prominent, but I mean, it was nothing compared to what it is now. And I took a leave of absence and actually went to Germany and did a full brewer's apprenticeship and learned in Southern Germany how to brew, Hefeweizens in particular, but also lagers like the Vienna Lager.
Beer question about the Vienna Lager. Mm. That style of beer, I remember when Brooklyn Brewery was first launching their Brooklyn Lager. Is that a Vienna Lager also?
Technically that, and Sam Adams are hoppy Vienna Lagers. So this is a little more of the tilted towards the caramelized malt side, not so much hops. I mean, I think folks have alluded to it now, sort of the cyclical nature of craft beer. We started out with these types of beers, and then it's just, it went to East Coast or West Coast, East Coast style beers and creative spins on IPAs. And I think people are coming back to these timeless classics. Mm-hmm. They've been around for thousands of years. There's a balance to it. There's a intrigue to it. We've just been doing it for 25, 26 years.
Ben, in Spain or in the Basque Country, do you drink beers like this? These Vienna lagers, malty?
Yeah, of course. Still IPA is like any of the styles, West Coast or hazy as you want. They're still there, like really strong, but the market is changing a lot to lagers. Like, for example, we focus a lot in Grossen to lager beers, especially German styles. I started my brewing career in Germany. I did my studies there, brewed there for 5 years. So, yeah, we do a lot of lagers, and yeah, people definitely like.
Wait, taste a beer and tell me what it tastes like to you. You can talk in Basque. We've done international shows. One time we had a Czech brewer on.
It tastes like a Vienna lager.
Oh, that's a good guess.
You should consider a few things.
On the nose. I'm on a roll.
Years ago, we had on a Czech brewer that he only spoke Czech, so you're welcome.
You can speak, I can speak German.
You can't speak Czech?
Czech, no, not Czech. I can speak a bit of Polish, too.
Well, you can throw some words in, all beer words. And we got more guests too. Greg, it's so great to have you. And these guys, Anthony and Paul, again, the role of curating a beer list, you're the expediters of taste and all that stuff, arbiters of taste.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about it is, we're in this, inherently, like, it's a tourist destination. And in it being a tourist destination, we started 11 years ago now when the craft beer wave was really just hitting the East Coast. So we've always had to kind of handhold our clientele because they come straight to us looking for a Peroni. They come straight to us looking for a Coors, right? Something that they're used to, something that is easy sipping, something that maybe they have it in the trunk of their car right at that given moment, right? But we've always
people
had to handhold.
The Bronx,
with beer.
Though. I mean,
all right, watch it, Jimmy.
Beer in there. I don't know, Jimmy. We'll just say it. But I think it's been a handholding experience, right? And I think that the American style IPA was more palatable, especially for people on the East Coast, and then the evolution to the New England style IPA, and like making sure that we keep variations from all different companies of the same style available at any given moment, so that people can kind of just like broaden their palate and say, hey, you know what? I like this New England better than that New England, this hop profile, this hop combination.
I think it was also a little bit about sort of creating stepping stones, right? Having something that's a little bit easier for someone who's not into craft beer to get started with, and then recommend them further up the ladder until they find what they like. And then they stay at a rung, or they go back down a couple of rungs and, you know, and figure it out.
Yeah. So. Greg, you know, what's cool is that I'm talking to more brewers that are specializing in certain styles. I was out in Denver. That show's coming out soon with Bruce Brewing, and they're specializing in Belgian style beers. Their triple's their flagship, which I love. And tell us more about when you studied German beer making and all that.
Yeah, so you know, like I said, my first beer experience was a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, and going to college in Northern California. So you know, I was familiar with that style, but going to Europe, you know, I didn't learn so much about the science of brewing beer, because that's pretty, you know, technically sound. You know, it's chemistry, biochemistry, microbiology, but it really was the craft and the appreciation for what is in the glass at the end of the day, and the standard. Like here, it's analogous to like pizza in Brooklyn, right? If you're making substandard pizza in Brooklyn, you're not going to survive. You know, it's a high level of expectation from the consumer, and I think as well as from some of the, you know, the craft brewers or the beer brewmaster, the true brewmasters whose history goes back to their grandfathers and great grandfathers who were brewmasters, probably in the same brewery. I mean, that's one of the challenges in the German beer world as a brewer is, you know, the automation, you know, robots. If you're going to get a job in the brewing industry in the brewery, you're going to have to replace your father, because they're just not expanding those opportunities. Like we have expanded, I think, you know, the craft beer world in the United States. You know, a lot of people who are passionate for craft beer actually had a chance in the United States to jump in, put on a pair of rubber boots, get burned by caustic soda and steam.
Sounds so exciting.
Yeah. and have some delicious beer to be proud of.
And then they go to Arthur Avenue Market and buy the figs.
And rub the figs on their burns.
So, I mean, for us, I mean, our perspective, obviously, is kind of a little longer time horizon. When we first started, New Jersey had like 5 or 6 craft beer bars in the entire state of 7 million citizens, 7 million residents. So we had to sell our beer in Philly and in Manhattan just to survive on draft, and it was kind of, you know, cutting our teeth on getting our beers into those places. A lot of the times we had to compete with the Germans, which are fantastic brewers, you know, and just watching the market start to grow, and then finally, I think craft beer started to be appreciated, look closer and closer to home. And that's sort of when we concentrated more on our home market. And now we've kind of built that up, and we're getting back into Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens.
Where is High Point Brewing?
So we're in northwestern New Jersey. We're not in High Point per se. Originally, we wanted to locate the brewery in High Point. So our confusing marketing has worked wonderfully. High Point is the highest point in New Jersey. It reminded me of where I worked in Southern
Jersey. So what is it, like 100 feet above sea level?
Yeah, a little more than that.
Exactly like that one.
How about meters? What's the meter?
It's less than 1,000 meters.
Less than 1,000,
So we're down the road quite a little bit. We're down the road towards Morristown, Wayne area. It took me almost 2 hours to get here, and we're about 45 miles from here.
Wow.
So that's why I'm ready for a beer.
Well, yeah, I'm going to drink some beers. And then there was one beer that I always stood out for me with Ramstein, this platinum beer. Mm-hmm. What was that?
Double Platinum Blonde. That was born in Spuyten Duyvel. Talking about Spuyten Duyvel. We were, this is early on, we were trying to sell our Hefeweizen. First of all, when you rewind the clock back to the time when what was most popular was not IPAs, it was light beer, domestic light golden lagers. And we're going into a lot of these different places with a cloudy beer. Our first beer was Hefeweizen, Blonde Hefeweizen. So we're going into a place with a cloudy beer, smells like bananas and cloves, and all you see on the bar is, you know, golden light lager. People look at you like, what's wrong with your beer and what's wrong with you.
Pass it around.
So we had to compete with, I won't mention their name, but
see, Greg talks with his hands, so he can't pass the beer at the same time. Right. I love this guy.
Best jersey.
There you go. One of the oldest breweries in the world makes a fantastic Hefeweizen that they were discounting deeply. So we're like, how the hell do we compete with this? And we said, you know what? We'll just take our Hefeweizen and double it.
That's right.
And kind of make a double Hefeweizen or Imperial Hefeweizen. So that's what the double platinum blonde really is. It was invented to basically for survival. And I think people really grooved on it. The higher ABV gives you, I think, a lot more, not only body, but you get more of the banana, more of the clove, more of the wheat beer things you're looking for in a wheat beer. And it's 7%.
So. And you were addressing the market at the time. When did you first create this double vice?
That's probably 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
You know.
Ben, again, having studied in Germany, what do you think of this style of vice beer?
That's right. Good, tasty, like as it says, like good amount of good balance between banana and clove. I think it's always like you need a bit mix of both things. Like there are some vice beers or like five cents that they go a bit too much in one direction. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. It reminds me to Vitus from when Stefan.
Yeah.
Very weird with the two same names.
Yeah, no, that was the beer that we were competing with the regular Vine Stefan. And then subsequent to this coming out, for some reason that came out, the Vitus. But this was invented really to just give people more of the Hefeweizen and not be a direct comparison to Paul Honor, Hacker Shore, Franz's Connor. So it's a little more of everything.
How is Hefeweizen doing in the U.S.? This is like a
so Hefeweizen, you know, it never caught on. Mm-hmm. I would say that in all transparency, mm-hmm. didn't catch on like the wit beers, the Belgian wit style, really, you know, look like Allagash, you know, those guys did tremendous jobs with the Belgian style. I think I'm not sure exactly why, maybe the American palate, likes coriander more than clove. I don't know. But it does, you know, it does produce a refreshing style of beer that in Europe is, you know, it's 30, so at one point 30, almost 35% of sales.
I think it's going... So it's like going down also. Like I have friends in Germany, like Josef, my friend, had brewer from the Schneiderweiser, mm-hmm. was telling me that they were forced to make start making lagers, like Helles, style beers, mm-hmm. because apparently young people in Germany also doesn't want to drink any Weiss beers anymore.
Yeah, one of the smart things I think that the German brewers did with Hefeweizen promotion was they kind of bootstrapped it to their cuisine. Like the classic thing is Weisswurst and Weiss beer, you know, and we never really did that. I think there was, you know, so many other avenues to go down that craft brewers really never got totally into Hefeweizen as they did.
Wait, I have a better parent, just so you know. The long story to it, the short story is if you're ever grilling or just cooking really quick, a nice Alaskan wild salmon, what's the best pairing?
Hefeweizen.
German Hefeweizen.
Okay.
All right, James is going to weigh in a little bit on history and styles. Go on.
Oh, okay. I guess I know.
That's what you do.
No, here we are. Well, what I can say about the German Hefeweiss style, you know, it's, do I do vital stats? You know, 4.3 to 5.6 ABV, you know, typically about 8 to 15 IBUs. SRM is about 2 to 6, so that's anything from pale straw, maybe a little bit closer to daffodil. And so, you know, Ben was talking a little bit about the... pretty much the high notes that you'll get, a little bit of clove, you know, and that comes from a specific yeast strain that's being used. You know, there's a specific gene in that yeast strain which will convert something known as ferulic acid into that clove character, which is known as 4VG. High bubblegum notes, you know, that comes from an ester known as isoamyl acetate. And so those are kind of hallmarks of that style.
Thank you, James. We have more guests too that are introduced, not right away, but so Ben, for you, Hefeweizen. Why does it smell like banana? Is that what throws people off? Greg?
Yeah, so that's just the one of the signature esters produced by the unique yeast strain that we use. So as you mentioned before, 4-vinyl glycol is one of them, as well as
So, Zach, have you ever had a Hefeweizen on draft? I did Jimmy's 43 like 2005, 6. I had some Hefeweizen on, but that was it.
I feel like it was one of those things when we were riding the craft wave, it was so hard to find a brewery in the United States that was making Hefeweizen that I actually really wanted to drink. So we had a dedicated line for like wheat-style beers, mostly wit beer dominated. But I did, I mean, we were also Kitty Corner from Zoom Schneider, which is no longer open, but they were selling, I feel like every time I went over there in warm weather, they were selling Hefeweizen by the gallon, literally. So I definitely had my fair share that I like enjoyed and tried, but it was one of those things that still to this day eludes me to find like the, like this one tastes great to me. I love that that flavor profile because like it does stand up to food. You said salmon. I always say lobster rolls or
wild salmon.
Wild salmon. Alaska. Very important. Very, very important. I'll meet you there. Or lobster rolls. I feel like that's a really good pairing for brunch too. Great brunch beer. Just because I feel like it like it's kind of buoyancy lends itself to daytime drinking too.
Yeah, Miguel, stop that. One thing, it's nice to say that we have two brewers here who both studied in Germany, and I think it's really neat that we're starting to talk about classic styles again, and Germany is one of them. Ben?
Yeah, coming back to the Hefeweizen thing, tip for brewers, if you ever have a really tight tank space, if you need to brew more beer and you don't have more capacity, it's like one of the best styles to brew because it really goes so fast. Mm-hmm. I think you can do a good Weiss beer from brew day to packaging day in 7 days.
We're not that quick, but yeah.
But what is crazy.
Who knows Pacific Northwest history? What was the brewery out in the Pacific Northwest that specialized in they had a Weiss beer that was...
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, it's Widmer, but the thing about that's actually closer to like an American wheat. So
that's like a Hefe. They call it Hefe.
They called it a Hefe. It's a misnomer. It didn't have that clove characteristic to it. So that's a differentiating point.
Well, talk about cross, you know, bridging whatever, the divide. I also remember a 6 point around 2009-10 came out with an American wheat, also Apollo wheat. Yeah. So I feel like maybe that's what was going on, Greg, is that people didn't, we weren't accepting of the Hefeweizen in the States, but the American wheat was a bridge. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, you alluded to the kind of change of wheat beer. Maybe it was just a marketing mistake that, like, we didn't embrace the whole authenticity of the German Hefeweizen versus... I think the reason alt beer yeasted Widmer when I did some research, and that's why it was less, you know, estery, didn't have that classic banana clove aroma that you'd expected. So if you take a category and you start to make beers taste radically different in it, still call it the same thing, it probably confuses the consumer. So I think that was part of it. I think the other part was wheat beer came out before, you know, the real, you know, rocket skyrocketing of IPAs. So I think the cloudiness, the unusual banana character, I think kind of threw people a little bit.
I mean, I personally think that the girl in the room is there was a multinational base out of Colorado that introduced their version of a wheat beer. Yes, and I think it really kind of influenced like how people kind of accepted wheat beer in collective palate.
Okay, who is that?
It's Blue Moon.
Blue Moon.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay.
You're welcome, Jim.
Well, you're right. Well, that's like, you know, it's like wine coolers led people into the wine about 40 years ago. So I guess you got 40 years to go, Miguel.
Yeah, 40 years.
And now, if you want to just go full circle, now here in New York City, there's a local brewery who's making a phenomenal Hefeweizen, like very true to style. It's Grimm in Brooklyn. Their Hefeweizen, it's just phenomenal. So
you want to say more about that, Miguel?
Well, I had it a couple of times at the brewery, and, you know, I was very surprised because that's not a style you will see on one of the modern breweries making that style and making it true to, like, the German style. So they are very, I love Grimm. They're very particular on how they make their beers. They're very, you know, conscious about history of the beer, so they make it, you know, very well. And I also like that they respect the whole, not only the tradition of the beer, but how they serve it. They serve it in the proper glassware and everything. So it's just a whole experience.
Mm. We had, yesterday at Spite and Dival, they had a Grimm on draft also. So
We had the Weiss on draft as well right now. It's been really good to see. I was going to bring that up when we were talking about it before, but really good to see people line up. I feel like it's been a long time. I think the beer that shall not be named that James named, kind of like steered people away from it for a while.
You can name it, but I've never had it.
It's a, I just revisited it recently for the first time in a decade. It's not what you remember. You wouldn't, but
about 10 years ago, we did a show about the origins of Blue Moon. It started in the Sandlot Brewing underneath the baseball stadium. And at the time, Coors was very smart. Anyone in Colorado that was a prospective brewer, they hired and they got to work and tinker with all the things they wanted to. And that's the story, but that's another episode. So guys, back to this beer. All right, before we take a break and introduce our next guest, I'd like to say this. This is the year of classic styles. An episode coming up, which is probably going to come out before this one, is a Belgian-focused brewery in Denver called Brews. And my favorite beer there, their go-to beer, is a triple. Today, Ramstein, a 25-year-old craft brewery out of New Jersey, we're tasting their what's the beer again, Greg?
It's our Double Platinum Blonde.
But it's actually a Hefeweizen.
It's an Imperial Hefeweizen. Yeah. 7% Hefe.
Today in New York City,
Weizenbock.
It's like 78 degrees. It's hot and sweaty. But you know what I want to drink? This is the beer I want to drink. I don't want to drink a hazy IPA. I want to drink this beer. So maybe, I don't know, Anthony and Paul and Zach, do you think that this is going to be the year of Hefeweizen for the summer? Why not? If you're drinking pink rosé, maybe we need to drink Hefeweizen this summer.
Into that.
I mean, far be it for me to start a trend, but I'll drink one if you want me to. like I said, I've got the Grim on tap right now, and I have no reason to stop. For
Ben, you want to come and drink in a hot summer? You want to drink some Hefeweizen with us?
I would love it. I already do it at home, so why not do it here?
Before I go, tell us that you drink this at home. Tell us what you drink at home. Which beer, Hefeweizen?
I do. I mean, normally we do brew Hefeweizen. And other breweries only in summertime. So yeah, it's mostly like a taproom focus. It's a beer that people love in the hot summer of Basque Country. Also, as I told you, like we do have like really tight tank space, so like it's a beer that goes quite fast to do. So and historically, it's like a good summer beer, like very refreshing. And
So, is there any other lore of the Hefeweizen, James, or is it? Do you have to put fruit on it?
You can do whatever you want. You know, that's really the beauty of just drinking beer. I mean, I personally don't put like a lemon wedge on, which is kind of the tradition. Well, you know, for certain circles. But you know, I'm of the opinion you do what you like. You know, because this is it's beer. You know.
And if Blue Moon is Blue Moon a Hefeweizen? If so, is that the gateway beer?
It is not stylistically, pedantically a Hefeweizen by any stretch of the imagination.
But if you like Blue Moon, you might like to try Hefeweizen.
I think, if you're on that path, you know, why not get Hefeweizen a shot?
Guys, just so you know, as beer bar owners, that is your job. When I first opened Jimmy's 43, 2005, Stella was the go-to Pilsner. Mm. Instead, I got a Belgian Pilsner called Stroop.
Right.
So, there you go. Yeah, talking about the, like, putting fruit in the Hefeweizen or not, like, do you ever drink, like, some of the weird things they do with this kind of beers in Germany?
Wait, weird stuff?
Yeah, really weird stuff, yeah. Like, weird, I mean, everybody knows Radler, but it's like a Helles or lager with lemonade. But with Hefeweizen, you have like different mixes you can drink in bars. One of them being Cola Weizen, but it's basically like this beer with Coke. And you also have Banana Weizen, but it's basically Hefeweizen with banana juice.
Oh, wow. That was
Greg, big, you like? Come on, take the mic. Come on.
That was one of the big shocks for me working in Germany in a brewery that made fantastic Weiss beer. It was the Edelweiss Brewery in the Allgäu region, which is the foothills of the Swiss-German Alps. And just fantastic, you know, Hefeweizen. And they're, you know, famous for tall Weiss beer glass. And sure enough, the brewers at like 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning would pour soda into their Hefeweizen. And here I am, like this purist from America, thinking, you know, like, here I am at the hallowed halls of these, of this Weissenbier brewery, and they're just mixing it with cola.
You're in the country of Reinheitsgebot, and they're dumping soda.
But it's better than the cheap mimosa you get in most brunch places in New York. Listen, this is a great, you guys are awesome. I cannot believe that I'm in this room with all these cool people. This is old school Heritage Radio Network in Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, and we're going to introduce another guest. This is party time. Beer in New York City, right here on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo. Oh my. Yeah.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's a spirited talk. We are full of New York City beer bar owners and some brewers. Once again, let's go around the room and everyone do a quick introduction. What's your name and where are you from?
Here again, Beñat Gutierrez from San Sebastián, the Basque Country.
Love that.
Miguel Rivas, Brooklynite, the beer tricker.
Agus Blanco, I'm from Argentina, but I live in Madrid.
Greg Zuccardi, High Point Brewing, Ramstein Beers.
Zach Mack, owner of Alphabet City Beer Co. in East Village.
Paul Ramirez, co-owner of the Bronx Beer Hall, dead in the middle of Little Italy, Arthur Avenue.
Paul doesn't miss a beat. I love that.
Anthony Ramirez II, co-owner of the Bronx Beer Hall.
James Ty, Beer Acolyte Consulting, also in the East Village.
So if you listen through this whole, so far, another guest came in. This is the amazing power of a live in-studio recording. And Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Heritage Radio Network, 15th year. Support us. Become a member. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So our newest guest, please say your name again and tell us about you. Because what I love about doing the shows in the studio at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick is that guys like yesterday, my friend Miguel Rivas says, hey, we have a brewer from the Basque Country in Spain. And James Ty says, oh, I have an expert who's from Argentina. So who are you?
Well, okay, I'm a sensory trainer. Actually, what I do is train a lot of people to enjoy your beers, guys. So
like, that's workout?
Yes, that's right. Well, it's a training gym. Yes, it's like going to the gym that you go and do legs to make them stronger. Well, I do. You want to be better and taste it IPAs or brewing such beer, and I help you go into that level of sensory, you know?
So you're like the English chef who helps figure out screwed up kitchens and everything?
That's right. That's the idea. It's to customers to understand the beer and to brewers to stop doing...
Okay, what's the worst brewery you ever went to? Don't say the name. what's like a bad situation that you'll find that they don't think is bad?
Well, okay, so I will find a lot of off flavors in this type of beers, and they think that there are esters or phenolic parts, and it's not. And trying to say that to a client that is actually paying for you to tell something, it's difficult, you know that, right?
Like being a therapist.
Yes, totally. That's right. Well, I'm a psychologist. I work in beer because I was paying my career working in beer tender, and then I started studying about whiskey and a lot of shit more. Then I ended with my.
Then you studied psychology later?
No, I finished my career and I stopped making it, and now I work with brewers, so it's literally a 30. Awesome. Yes.
Wow. So, off flavors, James, off flavors. This is a serious problem, especially in a lot of new breweries, right?
I mean, certainly. If you have to get your brew house right, you know, you have to have the proper staff that's coming in and understands what they're doing. And I guess the question, August, is are you finding any specific kind of off flavors? Like, are they coming, like, what the source, or, you know, are there things that you're tasting consistently that you have to have those difficult conversations?
Okay, well, I don't like to say it all of flavors. I said no search flavors, because sometimes if you check out...
What was that? No,
like,
what?
No search. Like, they don't search for that flavor, but they got it in their beers. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you take it out of that beer and you put it in another one, and it's a nice flavor. The problem is that it's not go in that puzzle. Like, right. A beer for me is like not a box, but like a country, you know? You can be in the center of it in a style, or you can be just in the frontier part, like going to another country, going to another style. So I'm trying to brewers, sorry, with my hands, to go to them,
so
to the
like
middle.
You're the whisperer.
Something like that, like
Wait,
a guide.
Greg.
Yeah.
Greg's about to weigh in. Do you understand what she's saying? Do you need that kind of help?
Well, I think it helps to.
That's funny.
It helps to. The one thing that you said was interesting is that you shouldn't search for things; they should appear, because you can trick yourself into believing there's something there that, or something that's not there, and that is kind of an intriguing thing about where you want in terms of how we design a beer recipe. Like when you'll try a Rauch beer. Later on, and it is not a carbon copy of Schlenkler, which is a Northern Bavarian icon of Rauch beer brewing, which is heavy on the smoke, from the aroma all the way to the finish. We wanted we when we first embarked on making Rauch beer, we kind of made something similar to that and realized that it was too much of a niche and I think a little off-putting for the overwhelming group of craft beer consumers. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the people on the other side of the bar. It's not the people, you know, next to the fermenters and the taps. And if, you know, if our beer is sort of a little more dynamic, it lets a little more of the malt and the caramel malt come through and not so much of the Rauch beer smoke come through. It may not be exactly what you experience in Bamberg, but it's definitely a well balanced.
Great intro. We'll get to your Rauch beer, but August, and then we're going to talk to Ben about his beer too.
Perfect. Well, that is interesting what you are saying about this circle of a style, you know. I have been judging along all over, like in South Africa and Germany and other countries, Mexico, and it's funny, like one side, there's no like a capsule for a style. It's like this country that I like to say. And understanding that is not so easy because a lot of brewers want to copy like the best beer that they have taste, this one, and that's it. And no, there is such a big amount of things that you can play off. So
wait, August.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you're in a country like South Africa.
Yes.
What is a best beer that they want to copy? Like, just tell me, like, what are they trying to do?
Well, they're trying.
So we know, are they trying to do Budweiser? No. Other half?
Well, they're doing IPAs with sorghum. A lot of sorghum in all the classic and new styles. So I try some IPA, sorghum IPA that I loved. It's like this like yogurt part of that they give it, like sourness of an IPA. In the first moment, it was like, what my God, what is this? It seems like an off flavor.
Right.
But then I understand sorghum and it's like, okay, this is amazing. It's like another word of bitterness. It's another size. They're doing all the size, but in their way. So that's great for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, absolutely. Like, you know, I really need to be better about saying, like, I believe this fully. It's like off flavors is not really a thing. You know, there's aromatic compounds that are agnostic. And so sometimes they work in certain applications. Sometimes, you know, you wouldn't expect that. But the beauty about it is when you're going around the world and you're tasting all these different beers, you might not expect that in a specific style, but it comes out and it works really well. And that's a wonderful thing, because I think the missed opportunity is like everybody wants to kind of mirror what's going on in America. And, you know, that's not fun for me. You know, if I go to South America, if I go to like South Africa, I go to Korea, I want to kind of taste, you know, the sensibilities that are there. So that's a great point.
Sorry, but you asked me before about what I'm finding around DMS.
DMS?
It seems like brewers love it. I don't know.
What's DMS?
So this corn-like sweet flavor that can appear, it's always in the malt actually, but you can evaporate it from a lot of periods in the first part of the beer production and then it's gone.
Wait, Zach's not in his head. What?
Well, I mean,
what's DMS?
Dimethyl sulfate, right? So that's one of the, it's one of those off flavors that I'm not as particularly sensitive to. I'm like super sensitive to diacetyl, not to that, but I have noticed like there are people on my staff who are sensitive to it and they've picked up on that too. They've said the same thing. They're like that this is becoming more common as an off flavor that is just kind of being accepted. I know it's accepted in certain styles, accepted, quote unquote. But yeah, it tastes like sweet corn or canned corn. It's interesting. But
wait, so now back to Ben. Ben, just quickly tell us about the beer that you made and poured for us. Is this the only can we have?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, we got a few tastes.
It was in his pocket. It was in his pocket.
We can teach you how to smuggle beer into the country.
No, actually, like we have this beer here thanks to Miguel, because we sent him some a couple of boxes like a while ago. It's not the freshest. I think that was introduced to you like a couple of months ago.
January.
So yeah. What is it?
So we have like a, it's called Amavi, what it means 12 in Basque. It's like a classic Czech pale lager brewed with 100% Czech ingredients in our house lager yeast, which is coming from a brewery in Germany. Basically like we were talking about like what you try to mimic or not mimic, like I think there's some things that are like so classic and so well done that you cannot really like invent a lot in a Czech pale lager. So yeah, like everything you expect from a Czech pale lager, like just like two malts, It's brewed with a hop quartz mash, like infusion mash with a mash out decoction. I personally don't like to do like a triple decoctions in this kind of beers because I think like it adds too much of a malt character to this beer and like it has then less drinkability. 100% Czech hops, it's all SAF in our house lager yeast, I said.
So I want Miguel to just tell us why he loves you and why he brought you in. Because I know Miguel, listen, we met in 2015. He was the coolest photographer at our old New York City Brewers Choice event. And now he's really made a name for himself. First person I know who went from New York to judge in South and Central American competitions. He's in Europe. What is it about Gross, in your words? Why did you bring him on today?
So I met the guys from Gross when they didn't even have a brewery, like 10, 11 years ago. I met the owner, Andoni, and we connected through social media, through Instagram. So we started following each other. He told me about his brewery. He was a gypsy brewer. So the first thing he asked me was he wanted to try Hetty Topper. But he was in the Basque Country, so I was like, okay, I can do that. And, you know, back then, 11 years ago, it was very hard to find. But I did. I made a little box for him, and I sent it to the Basque Country. And then I went to visit the Basque Country for the first time in 2018, and I met them in person. And I went to visit the brewery, try the beers. And I always told them when I met him, I don't like IPAs. I've never liked IPAs, and I will never like IPAs. And that's what they were making. And I said, okay, this is great, but you know, why don't you make other styles more, either more typical to where you are, or what about lagers? And you know, he was not sold on that. And then a few years later, he came in, and he comes with all this baggage, you know, from Poland, from Germany. So when I learned about that, I was just crazy. And one of the first lagers that he make is the ones that I tried, so they started making.
Wait, but Ben, what's gross mean? To me, gross means a dozen.
No, but you're saying
dozen,
it. You're saying it. You're saying it with the American accent.
It's not James. Math.
It's not gross.
Gross means
it's not. Gross. It's not gross.
No, it's 144.
It's gross.
It's delicious. Yeah, it's not gross.
Gross is gross.
Oh, what is it? Wait,
I said it's not gross. It's delicious.
Gross means 12 times 12.
No, but you're saying it with the American accent. It's gross, and gross is a neighborhood in Donostia, in the Basque Country, and that's where they're located. So it's a neighborhood of Gross, and also just a little nugget for all of you. Is that they are very irreverent, and they're I call them like the bad boys in Europe.
They're not Catholic.
They're always like causing trouble, doing things, you know, in a fun way. So when I told Andoni back then, it's like, dude, that name is not gonna fly in English speaking countries, because if you translate it just like you did, it doesn't sound very appealing.
No, mine's smart. 12 times 12.
But then when I met them and I saw like
shoes,
their what were they about, I was like, oh, it makes perfect sense. It's just gonna be amazing. So that's why I love them.
It works, man. Different countries, different words.
Yeah, it's good.
But I
yes.
So now we're going to switch this. We're talking beers. Why don't we get some more of the Ramstein beers and taste them? But August, so you're from Argentina. You're in Madrid.
Okay.
You know, Miguel is the first one that told me about what's happening in South and Central America. Is there a specialness between Spanish speaking countries? I don't know. You're the proof in the pudding, and James has been doing a lot of international tastings as well.
This is interesting because in Argentina, I think that we have learned a lot of theory and a lot of really, really particular things about beer because we couldn't import nothing, you know. So the brewers traveled outside and came back and opened breweries that make Belgian styles or German styles, and they do that because we couldn't drink the actual German beer. So that was the amazing part, because I think that maybe 30-40 years ago in Argentina they were a German brewery from an Argentine guy, you know, and a Belgian. There is each brewer do just a specific type style of family of beers, and they were so good about it because they didn't change just that. So I think that that's the main difference between Argentina and Spain.
All right, you said Argentine. This is my cultural reference. Cole Porter, great American songwriter. There's a song with the word Argentine. Do you know it?
No.
Does anyone?
Are you going to sing it for us?
Yeah,
sing
I would if you had it. All day I was thinking the Argentine's coming.
I just do conversions, Jimmy.
All right, it's bad. Okay. We got to look at that up. Cole Porter's song, reference to an Argentine. It's a great song.
Okay.
So well, this, going back 100 years, you got a great reputation in America.
Well, I need to Google this, but but yes, that's for me, that's the difficult for exporting beers to Argentina make us learn a lot. Because we needed to, like, brew it ourselves.
Mm. Wait, Zach, mm-hmm. We're talking Argentine Cole Porter. What's your cultural reference, Zach?
Honestly, I love music. I'm lost on the Cole Porter reference here. I wish I knew. I'm going to go and Google it.
Someone's going to Google it now.
Yeah, all right. Someone put it up on Spotify.
And before James, Greg, next beer, it's your show. We're actually here because, first of all, there's a rock beer hat. We're in the studio, Roberta's. And we're reintroducing Ramstein 25 years ago. You've been brewing beer. You were part of the New York City Brewers Guild.
Yeah.
You weren't in New York City for a while with Niche Brands and Manny Calderon, who's a legend. You're back in New York City. Yesterday, I saw you at Spite and Dive. I was going to say St. Anselm's, their restaurant. And now we're here in Roberta's.
And Manny's doing a great job getting us out to, first of all, some of the finer craft beer bars. You know, the Barcades out there, St. Anselm's, like you said, and a bunch of other places, Harlem Hops, great, you know, Bronx Ale House. Hopefully some of the folks in this room will be interested in carrying our beers as well. The one I brought today is our spring seasonal. This is a Ramstein Maibock. So Mai is...
Wait, so you say it's spring seasonal, but it's actually a Maibock.
Right.
Tell us about the Maibock style. Because again, guys, our listeners, many of them are learning about beer. When you're going from Blue Moon to something else,
they're not.
If you know what, there's Maibock. Is that a spring beer? And then there's a summer beer.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the late great.
We have to do our job and just realize that not everyone drinking beer is 60 years old.
Right. So the late great Michael Jackson, Amen. The beer writer, said, you know, there's a season for every beer and a beer for every season. And I think in this case, this sort of reflects exactly what goes on in the spring season. So historically, Maibock beer, and we could talk about when beers are released earlier, getting earlier and earlier, and the bad stuff about that. But Mai means May in German. So this is the beer that would be, you know, poured out and celebrated on the 1st of May, which is May Day, and you had the May Baum, the Mai Baum, which is a big tall pole that people would dance around. You know, you can see that in a lot of the graphics. But it's a Bock beer style, which means it's a lager that's stronger than your average lager. It's about 7%. It's north of 6.5%. So it falls in the single Bock category. It differs from Oktoberfest in that I think there's a little more a nod towards sort of a hoppier bite. It's a little lighter. It's not as caramelly sweet, but it does have that kind of full-bodied feel and that higher alcohol that you'd expect to have.
Great beer moments. About 10 years ago, one of the hottest 4th of Julys ever in New York City, I was sitting with some friends. We had Einbecker and Maibock. Literally, it was so hot, we had to keep the beer on ice. We would only pull one out at a time and pour it and drink it fast. That style beer, it turned me on that day. I realized, oh my God, a Maibock can be one of the best beers you've ever had.
Wow. I agree. Unfortunately, it's one of those beers that's sort of lost in the kind of transition between a winter beer and all of a sudden summer beers are on the shelves in May or April or now March. And it sort of overshadowed the spring seasonals really don't exist anymore, right? So when we first came out with our Maibock, we released it in May. People were already serving summer beers. Nobody wanted it. Same with Oktoberfest. If you're not early enough, it's almost like the fashion industry. You're selling, you know, swimsuits in February. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think that destroys that kind of classical styling and pairing and seasonality. I mean, we talked about the wheat beers earlier being awesome in the high, hot heat, humidity of, you know, the New York metropolitan area summer times. This beer, you know, if you were just making a seasonal wheat beer, you'd be bringing it to market in March when it's still technically March. We still had winter time. So this is sort of that in-between transition that we're still keeping alive. We think it's a delicious beer. A lot of people do. It's actually a 100-point rating right now on ratebeer.com.
Hey, great. Well, Greg, before Zach talks and then James,
What is the finish on this? You've got this certain malt.
Yep.
So it's in this as well as the Vienna lager.
Yeah, so all of our ingredients,
which is your amber lager.
Yeah, all of our ingredients are imported directly from Germany, except the water, which comes from our spring-fed reservoir, which is one of the reasons we're not in High Point, as we alluded to. We're in Butler. Butler has its own fantastic soft water supply. So our malt comes directly from a maltster in central Germany. This is primarily made with Pilsner malt and a little bit of caramelized malt as well. It's obviously a lager yeast. It's decoction mashed for those homebrewers. That means like it's a little more complicated process than just throwing malt in with water and separating it and boiling it. There's a boiling of the grain process that goes on that brings out some of the, I think, more caramelized malt flavors. The one thing is, you know, this beer has quite a bit of hops to it. Most people don't realize that there's a lot of hops to it because there's also a lot of malt to it. And that's sort of what we talk about with dimensionality.
You know what's funny about both the amber lager and this Maibock, when you talk about caramelized malts, I think about some beers I've had from Mexico and Spain. So that's actually a style. What were you going to say, Ben?
About the Maibock style, I mean, like, amazing beer, but I think like this is one of the styles what I saw in New York this couple of days. Like obviously it's like a spring seasonal. I saw it in a few different breweries these days, and it's like one of these styles that is a bit different here in the US comparing to Europe, because like the classic styles, classic Maibocks in Germany normally will be a bit lighter in color. So you think a bit as a Maibock as a stronger Helles. So basically you have Helles, then you have export, which will be a bit stronger, and then you have Maibock, a little bit around 6.5, but still being like really light in color. What I saw in New York these days is like all of them, they have this kind of more maltiness to it. What it wouldn't be really like true to style in Germany, but it's like actually more of a Bock beer, but not Maibock, but it's still like amazing.
So kind of like how Brooklyn Lager has that real ambery flavor and all that.
I'm talking about how styles change a bit depending where you are.
And there is something in particular about this that you're telling, because in Germany, everything like have the idea that they are like really close maybe about a sort of things, but I have been judging with them a lot in Nuremberg, and I have been talking with a lot of brewers in Germany, and it's interesting how each brewery has their own line and flavor palette of the style. So here in America, they have like just wrote the box where the style needs to go. But the actual country that invited the style have no box there. Like you go to each brewery and they have, of course, they have like a line of flavors, but they're not so close in what. And here, what Ben is saying, I think that I saw that. Like it's a way of brewing a Maibock or a Hefeweizen. And when you go to the breweries there, they're, of course, they are in the same line, but they're like not imitating each other's, and they're not the same flavors.
It's something you see, I mean, like exactly the same sample, like we talked about Maibock and in Germany or Maibock in the US, you see it also with Oktoberfest beers. Actually, like there are Oktoberfest breweries, like German breweries, like doing a Oktoberfest beer for Germany, but it will be like really light in color, so it's what German palate seems to like nowadays, but then they do like a Oktoberfest beer like for the US market, but it's much darker and it has more malt character. So it's like a bit, I think, more what the market is expecting in the US with this kind of beers, maybe. I don't know, you tell me.
Yeah, and I think for us as well is, you know, we've always tried to have a little bit of individuality as well, because if we just make a carbon copy of, you know, a Helles Bock that's out there, I can't compete with Hofbräu. Is owned by the Bavarian state. So it's like, you know, it's like having the state of New York's checkbook. So you go to a place that sells your beer, how many glasses do you want? You could have an unlimited supply of glass, you know, that kind of stuff. So we have to, you know, honor the style and tradition, but give it our own personality, make it a little different and hopefully a little more desirable.
What's the name of your governor in New Jersey?
Phil Murphy.
Well, ask him for money. Miguel, let's pour the rock beer that Zach said.
I want to say this is delicious.
Wait, Zach, weigh in, because I know you've got a lot to say. Then Paul, because he's ready to go.
I'm just kind of building on what everything people have already said here. Is it's like it's definitely this style specifically, Maibock, is like harder to market. I know that we had the great culling of spring seasonals specifically. I feel like about anything else on the market, spring never really had the strongest footing. But Maibock is the one thing that still seems to kind of shine through. Wait, not to give them...
You sell my book at Alphabet City.
Oh, absolutely. Old World, New World, too. But, I mean, we have a...
Really? Who made, which ones?
Grimm. Right now, we had a Grimm Maibach on until...
Grimm made a Maibach and a Hefeweizen? Exactly. Wait a minute.
Not to give them
is
too
Grimm
many
like on the cutting edge, James?
Yeah, not to give them too many plugs.
Grimm makes a lot of great beers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like they can do whatever they want to do.
Wow. Just look no further than Grimm. You know, Ben, you're in New York City. You better go make a collab with Grimm, too.
Yeah. No time anymore, but I'll look another time.
Next time.
Thank you.
Paul.
What are we drinking?
Just tell us something. I don't know. Well, like, put it this way. We're talking about the Latin. I don't know the words. I can mix them up. The Latin community from Argentina to the Basque Country in Spain to the Bronx. You know, I forget what the Bronx is. No, is it? No.
Well, we're Puerto Rican.
What's the term? The Puerto Rican expats in the Bronx. Borico.
Boricua's, okay. But that's all Puerto Rican. That's so, from the island.
Yeah.
But New Yorkans is like something that people say.
All right. So we're talking about some of these styles of beer.
Mm-hmm.
What are people drinking there besides whatever? I don't know. You guys are the Bronx experts.
You know, I'll say... like I mentioned earlier, what'd you say?
Coquito. So we actually make a coquito style stout, which we bring out seasonally. It comes out at the end of November, right before Christmas, and we're out of it by New Year, right? And it's all of your notes. You have all of your coconut, you have all of your cinnamon, you have your rum barrel flavoring, but then it's just like it's dark. So it's something that is off putting to like your traditional coquito drinkers, but like it's still like an ode to a classic style.
I'm coming to try this.
And I think, I think, you know, when we talk about these styles and we talk about what people expect and what the masses expect, I think the, you know, what really pushes and what really sells is when somebody does put a unique take on something that's
expected. And Puerto Rico's tropical, so it's completely different.
Oh, yeah. Beer-wise,
Argentina,
I mean, please,
But we love Christmas, so.
Right. I mean, one thing, we're a craft beer bar through and through, but we sell medallas. And medallas are as like Puerto Rican Coors Light, right? Like, it's cracked on a beach. It's 10 ounces. It's ice cold. And you chug it, shoot it back, done, onto the next one. And people drink 24, 12, you know, 24, 30 of them.
And you eat one of those and get a fig.
Right, there you go. Right, they get a fig.
And you also get a chance to win a trip to Puerto Rico from the Moxes. That's what it
says.
Yeah.
We'll call you.
Don't call Anthony, us. You guys are on the same page. And then, James, last thing. Let's talk about my block, then we're going to taste Rob Pierce.
So the question I had, and then I pose this to everybody in the room right now, it's, I mean, the beer that's presented to us that Greg brought, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of like really admirable qualities to it. But if you were to kind of frame it up differently, you know, just kind of, it's going to sound so blasphemous, but like, you know, not calling it a Maibach, but like kind of brand it as something else and kind of sell it at a different time of year. Like, what are thoughts on that? You know, and, you know.
I am A-OK with that. You laughed, but for me, I think, and if we care what I think that it's all about the branding. It's all about how you're selling it, right? I mean, if you have a good beer, it's a good beer 365 days a year. It's not just good in the spring. It's not just good in October, right?
Totally. Actually, one of my works is to change the name of the style of the beer of the breweries just to sell it more.
Yeah.
And there is a guy there doing an amber ale, and he's like, focus on this amber ale. And nobody will sell an amber ale. It's not so easy to sell in Spain. So I was just put it red IPA, and that's it. Yeah. He goes like, no, that will not help. Ta-dan, they're selling all over it.
Yes,
and now he still called him Biker, so like, I'm
okay, so this guy, he's got a Maibach, the one we just tasted. How would you sell that?
Okay, well...
That's consulting. You have to pay for that.
She gets paid, don't worry. Tell us.
I can tell you something. Depends on the public that you're going. But for this beer, if you say like a bacon-style ham beer, they will love it. And they will go for it. And people, like, you do the banana, and you put here the bacon beer, you will, of course, sell it a lot. I can tell you this.
Ben,
I'll drink to that.
You're okay with the traditional style.
I hope we never get to this point that it has to call a beer.
We're here.
Zach, how would you sell it?
I want to believe that people are saying,
I mean, guys, in New York City, Zach's had from Grimm, he's had Hefeweizen on, a great style of beer for summer, and Maibach. How do you sell
it? It's honestly, it's the most divisive of any style we've ever sold of any kind of beer. Rauch beer is, again, this is actually...
Oh, wait, where's the Rauch beer?
Right there.
Well, yeah, the Rauch beer, if we're talking about that, that's like one of the harder things to sell to people, because if you don't prime them for the taste of smoke, they are... And there's a sensitivity there, too. People are going to jump to immediately the worst negative connotation on the first sip. So you basically... Usually what I sell it as is like a more of like a barbecue accompaniment, or I tell people, if you want something that's really interesting, more of like a scotch... but I never use the words to like change the name. Like I use the word Rauch beer because I think it's important to ground it because it is a historic style.
Again, like many styles, you don't know just how intense it is or the range of flavors. I'll give you two good ones. Schlenkele Helles is a lager that happens to be made in the
same smoke wine
facility.
Yeah.
And then one that I like locally, I really like the Threes Fuse, which I've had.
Yes, we've had the Short Fuse. Yeah, that's a great beer. And we've had both of those on draft.
It's like a lager that has a hint of smoke.
Yeah.
Because smoke can be an ingredient like hops, right? Yeah.
We've had both of those on draft, Schlenkele and some of the seasonal Schlenkele special offerings and Short Fuse, and it is a harder sell for some, and we clean the line after because we have to.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things where people have this like aha moment some of the time. And that's,
okay, finish our rock beer, Ben.
Yeah, it's talking about like the style. Like Schlenkele actually is like probably the most well-known like beer to the style, but actually it's like one of the like the one with more smoke flavor to it.
Yeah.
Like I find it like really good when you are like, as you say, you know, with like training with food, with meat, stuff like that. But like the most of the Rauch beers in the Franconia area, Bamberg area, they are like actually much more light in the smoke flavors.
Like subtle.
Yeah,
the smoke can replace a hop or something.
I would say that you're the sweatshirt that you wore to a bonfire 2 days later.
Sounds delicious.
Last one, Anthony. Hey, Paul, do you guys have you put any Rauch beers on draft at Bronx Beer?
So we've had smoke beers. You know, they sell faster on draft than they do in a can, right? The minute you tell somebody about it, they're not as willing to crack the can as much as they're willing to taste something off of draft and then be intrigued beyond just that taste to say, hey, you know what? I'll get a pint, right? We're fortunate to be in the center of a market. There is a butcher shop to the left of us. There is an Italian deli. There are plates of meat everywhere. So people
What's the best sandwich at the Italian deli?
Wow.
We're talking about beer. We're talking about bacon beer. We're
talking about beer. We're talking about sandwiches.
I'm really hungry, right?
Yeah. I am. I'm at reverse. What is it, Paul? Your favorite sandwich at the deli?
So my favorite would be
Avenue Market.
The Big Brooks porchetta sandwich. And that's done with, it's porchetta, smoked mozzarella, and then there's like hot peppers on top of it, right? And then it can be fresh oil. You can have it in the bread. You can also just have it on the side, put some balsamic glaze on top of that, and then drink it with the crispiest, coldest beer that we have.
I want it.
You want it, right?
Let's go. You want it right now. Let's go.
Hey, wait, what about this word crispy boy? What does that mean? No.
So you need to know your public, right? In Argentina, for example, this Rauch beer will be like
country?
Asado. Argentina.
Oh. That's not the Argentine. Cole Porter, who looked it up.
We'll do it after this.
But you will drink this beer with an asado, right? With an asado, with a barbecue, but in an Argentine style. But in Spain, what I do, blind tasting with people, they don't say barbecue. They say ham or bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I put this word to the desk. And I love to do blind tasting with clients, but not like freaky clients, like on top clients, the regular clients. They will say things that I just take notes because they're so amazing with also these palettes that you will never, like a beer drinker or beer knowledge, will say it about right. that. And I think that that's the word that we need to take to build the bridge between new public and selling beer, because we need to sell the beer. So
that's right.
That's there's right. a bacon, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. We found it, guys. If any of you know Cole Porter, it was in one of those Red Hot and Blue series back in the 90s.
No one knows.
Yeah. So let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Do you have the
there's a line in here. Where is it? It's
sing it.
Oysters down in Oyster Bay, do it. Cape Cod clams, do it. And where is it? Because you're falling in love.
some Argentines without means do it.
For the record, Jimmy looked that up. Yeah. No one else but Jimmy looked that up.
Again, Shatner vibes over here.
All right, thanks. So, Rock Beer, last one. This is an amazing show. I got eight guests
remaining. I did just want to let everybody know that this
is not available yet in Argentina, but it is available in Brooklyn, and it's available
in Argentines
and
do it.
It does have that beautiful balance, that balancing act of smoke and
clams
malt,
and Cape
right?
Cod. Do
it doesn't go over the line. So it's a great food beer, and it's great for your event tomorrow.
Right? Well, that's a big shout out. Even though tomorrow, by the time this comes out, you won't be at it. All summer, all of the Food Karma events, which I produce, Brisket King NYC, Rib King NYC, Pig Island NYC, Manny from Niche Brands will be featuring Ramstein beers.
Thank you.
And we love it. And you know what I'm going to drink this summer? I'm drinking the Rock beer, but I'm going to drink the Platinum.
Nice.
I call it Double Vice. I know you call it Blonde now. Blonde.
I think we have some suggestions here I might be mulling.
Yeah, let's find all right.
Then I send you the bill, okay?
Yeah. Last thoughts. We'll offset it, you know, advertising. Okay, last chance, everyone around the room. We'll close out because this is a great show. I love it. It's eight people in the room. We're here in Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, the home of our Heritage Radio Network. Ben, anything else you want to say to this crew?
No, just thank you for having me here. Like, it was a pleasure. Thank you for the beers. They were all amazing. Like,
oh, thank you.
Next time I come to New York,
please,
US, we can talk more about beer.
You're going to Miami. What are you doing in Miami?
And I'm working. And I got really professional brewer, so I'm going to be putting my beers in the India Festival from Tripping Animals.
Next time you come, we'll do a show about international festivals with August, okay?
Sounds good.
Miguel, dude, thank you, man. You've expanded our world, international beer guy now. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. It's always a pleasure to share beer with you and meeting all new people in the industry.
Thank you very much. Okay, my brand is Lupulo Digital, like digital hop. So you can search for a lot of different fruit to pair your...
What's your name again?
Try to...
August what?
August Blanco, yeah.
All right.
That's right. And Lupulo Digital, that's my brand where I do all this stuff and tasting, gym tasting, actually. Thank you for having me.
This is one of those wonderful stories. I love doing the show live because James Todd texts me today and says, oh, I have a guest for you.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic guest for the show, and I better than having me on, I'll tell you that much.
We meet with James tasting in Brazil.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. So August and I, we met in Brazil, and, you know, it's we're like in the international judging circuit, and it's always nice to see her, you know, and I'm happy that she's here.
So, guys, if you're aspiring in beer, don't open a brewery. Become a judge. I love it. Greg, that's your next beer.
All right. Thanks so much, Jimmy. Thank you all. Everybody, it was very nice to meet everyone here. And, you know, wishing our fellow brewers all the best. And I want to thank New York for bringing me back, and Manny, and looking forward to a great summer and fall and future here back in New York City. So
thanks,
drink Ramstein beer.
All right. Zach?
Guys, it was awesome being here again. First time back since COVID, and what a great group. This was the most energetic and lively time I've ever had in here, which is saying a lot.
So, wait, Zach, Alphabet City Beer Co., East Village.
Alphabet City Beer Co., East Village. Yes, I'm a writer as well. It's bouncing all over the place these days, but you can find my stuff all over the internet. ZMAC, ZMACK, on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff.
All right. And if you made it this far, you're a diehard fan. The gentleman from the Bronx.
Paul Ramirez again. Love being here. Love being able to taste a bunch of new stuff. I'm really happy that I got to taste this gross beer because it's exactly the opposite of its name. It was absolutely delicious. You know, I was happy to see you again, Jimmy. Looking forward to...
Gross is a small town in
Boston. Yeah, well...
No, it's 12 by 12.
Now we learn.
It's a neighborhood. Do you want to put any attention to the show? Come on. It's your own show.
He's had a lot of beer. Give him a chance. Anthony Ramirez, Bronx Beer Hall. Thanks for having us. Great time. I just love the vibe we have going on today. And I am loving this Ramstein Maybach. I can't wait to have more of it. Come visit us. Bronx Beer Hall, Arthur Avenue, Bronx, Little Italy.
Yeah, James Ty, Beer Acolyte. Looking forward to having some brisket at Brisket King paired with some beers from Ramstein. And then later on going to both ABC Beer Company and the Bronx Beer Hall. and as well as getting my picture taken by Miguel and then hanging out with Ben at Gross.
Yeah, I like this. I like to say this. Guys, thanks so much. Big shout out to our engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Armin Spengen. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio. Thanks to all the guests and all the friends you guys brought in. 15 years of Heritage Radio Network. Thank you guys so much. Thanks, Roberta's Pizza. We'll catch you next time. Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Thank you!
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys rocked it out!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.